Ready for the intro?
Good morning, and thank you for tuning into KBOO Community Radio this morning. I'm your host, Linda Olson Osterlund. This is the KBOO's radio zine. And this morning, what we're going to be talking about is the May Day attack by Patriot Prayer and Joy Gibson on Cider Riot, a brewery for cider and pub in inner southeast Portland. And so that's our topic, and I hope that you have heard about it at least some. It was on May Day itself. The May Day had gone on, and there had been a couple different kinds of demonstrations, and Patriot Prayer had come over and spent the day trying to bait people and get into fights, but did not. And they had also announced in advance their going to Cider Riot. Cider Riot was having a party, an outside party, a celebration of May Day and International Workers' Day, and Patriot Prayer showed up and began a lot of noise and catcalling, and then sprayed mace into the patio area, hitting somebody, and that began then people began to defend themselves, and it began the attack in force that ended up with one person at least seriously injured. So that's our topic today. This will be a call-in show. I want you to feel free to call in. You can line up that number now. I'll only be talking for a little bit before I invite you to answer the phone. I invite you to call us. It's 503-231-8187. And I do want to hear from you about this. I think this issue is very important. It appears that the police basically stood down with this. They say that they monitor Patriot Prayer and Joy Gibson very closely, so they had to have seen the Twitter feed. They had to have known where they were going. There is at least one person who reported to Cider Riot that they saw the police down by the Plaid Pantry, by the donut shop, staged in their riot gear with their riot conveyance, apparently ready to come on board if they needed to. Now, at the same time, when the attack happened on Cider Riot, they called the police, and they were told that the police had already responded, and yet somehow police did not show up at Cider Riot, a few blocks from where the riot squad was staged. Now, we don't know for sure they were staged there. The police are not saying that. I'd love to have their information officer call in and clear that up, but it sounds that's standard technique for them. They often stage extra officers off-site. I've seen them in many locations, determining before whether they're going to bring them in. And so what I want to go to now is we have a couple clips. I'm going to just play the first one. These are clips of a press conference that took place yesterday morning at Cider Riot. I went to that press conference and recorded. So some of the recording, this recording you're going to hear, is from that press conference yesterday. The press conference was to announce their lawsuit against Patriot Prayer, Joy Gibson, and several other defendants that are part of that organization. Let's go to that first clip. Oh, I'm sorry. I just found out that the clips did not get transferred to the current board op, and so we don't have those clips. We'll get them later in the show and be able to hear them. In the meantime, let me fill you in a little bit more on this. So there is a lawsuit that's been handled, and that lawsuit was brought, and they're working pro bono with Cider Riot, and that lawsuit was brought by the let me get the right name for you here. It's the Oregon Justice Resources Center, and Juan Chavez was at the press conference to represent them, and he is the person named on the lawsuit along with the Justice Center. So that's the Oregon Justice Resources Center. There was also Amy Hirschfeld from Amy Hirschfeld Koppel from Western State Center, an organization that is for pushing democracy and doing various projects to ensure democracy within the Western states, and they were there to show their support, and that was pretty important. So the lawsuit is saying that there have been serious damages created by Cider Riot, created by Patriot Prayer against Cider Riot. Let me say a little bit about Cider Riot if you don't know it. The name sounds riot. What's that about? Well, Cider Riots apparently refers to riots that happened in England against taxes on cider, and they were part of the inspiration for the uprising in Boston of the Tea Party. And so they're actually for more democracy and less oppression from above. And the person who owns the brewery has, his name is Abram Goldman Armstrong. He's been brewing cider ever since he was a young man, and doing it in his kitchen, his garage, any place he could, and started doing it professionally in 2013. And so, you will hear in the news that this is a bar, but it's not a bar in the sense that it serves alcohol, has betting games, etc., going on in it. It's not a bar. It has a bar, that long wood thing where people can sit at within it, but it's a brewery. It's a cider brewery, and it sells cider and beer and wine. And it sponsors many events within the public. We do have those clips for you now, so we'll go ahead and take the first one. We're going to have that first clip, and I'll talk to you about it after it's on. You're going to be hearing from Abram Goldman Armstrong, the owner of Cider Riot.
So I'd like to talk about the May Day event and what was actually going on. This is something that we did last year as well. We had music, community organizations, there was art and literature from different people, and it was a great time. And last year we had a great party, live music. There were cupcakes this year. They looked amazing. I didn't get a chance to try any. But that's what people were doing when these thugs came across state lines to assault us. They came down with saying, "We're going to attack." Then they followed up on their threat. They showed up here, and thankfully our community stood up, and our pub didn't get destroyed. And, thankfully more people were not injured by these guys. They're a gang. They're a hate group who came down to attack a peaceful gathering where people were just enjoying themselves, looking at the different art from different organizations. And it was really a horrible experience for all involved. Instead of taking part in the celebrations, I had to turn my production area into an emergency medical station so we could get the people that were attacked by pepper spray, get them some treatment. And that's what we were doing in the midst of this melee. I was back here, and my staff called the police. They said that, "Oh yeah, we've responded," but there wasn't a response until about an hour after the Patriot Prayer guys had finally been driven away. That's really disturbing. And thanks to our community for sticking up for us. If we didn't have such great community support, we were kind of left to hung out to dry by the police, and that's really disturbing. We phoned them, numerous neighbors phoned them, the folks over at Les Pigeons had phoned the police, and there was no appropriate response. Time and manner of response is what we're talking about here, and I told that to the officers when they arrived an hour later, and it's really quite disturbing. But thankfully we have a great community who didn't let these thugs get into our business, and without our community, we would have been in a much worse state. So,
and that you were listening to was Abram Goldman Armstrong, the founder of Cider Riot. That was recorded at his press conference yesterday, where there was the announcement of the lawsuit against Patriot Prayer, Joey Gibson, and several other individual defendants. I have the information for you if you're interested in that. I want to encourage you to call in and talk about this. I think it's really important that we discuss what it means when an organization like this can come over and attack small businesses in our community. Unfortunately, most of the press who's been covering it tried to pose this as sort of mutual combat, but I'm pretty clear that the people at Cider Riot did not go out to meet Joey Gibson halfway to Washington and start a riot with him. They were in the place they should be, having a celebration, when they were attacked by people who came there to attack them. Joey Gibson live streamed it the whole time. So, and you can see a lot of videos of it online. Some of them are pretty disturbing. So I'd like you to call in and talk about this and talk about what you think can be done, what needs to be done about the police response. It's 503-231-8187. I hope you're awake and energetic this morning, because I really want to hear from you on this subject. I want to give you a little bit more background, and I do want to say that, you know, Cider Riot does a lot of events, fundraising events, and other kinds of events for people in the community. One of those, or for organizations in the community, one of those organizations is KBOO. They've sponsored our book and record sale, and allowed us to have it in their facility, which is really huge and wonderful for them. It raises money for KBOO when we do it, and I think we'll be doing that again this year. But they've also supported all sorts of things, groups from Morris Dancing, fundraisers for other organizations, in fact, a fundraiser for houseless veterans, and even a feral cat coalition. And that's just, you know, a few names of the kinds of things that they do. They form themselves in when Abram developed this. He said that he wanted Cider Riot to be a safe place, an inclusive place for all people in the community, for people of every color, ethnicity, for people of all different kinds of backgrounds and persuasions, a safe and warm place where people could come and enjoy their company and each other and a good cup of cider. So I think that's a lot why it is, in fact, being attacked. They have they have held events also that have been for organizations called Antifa, like Rose City Antifa. I know that Abram in the press conference said that he wanted to make sure people called people not Antifas. It sort of distanced them and puts them farther away from you, but people who are anti-fascist. That's who was there, were people who were avowedly anti-fascist and willing to stand up against it. The event itself, it appears, this is something that he has been planning. Patriot Prayer plans regularly. There is a history of attacks on Cider Riot, and I think we have a clip that can tell us a little bit more about that, so we'll go to that. But once again, I want to give you that phone number, 503-231-8187. And now we'll go to another clip from Abram Goldman Armstrong talking about the history of Cider Riot and the attacks on it.
They basically have been harassing us. Our building was vandalized by them in January. They've been saying they're going to come here and, you know, sort us out or deal with us for months. They've said that before. A couple years ago, they actually doxed me. If you can, I use that. Is that in common parlance? So basically, they you know, said this is Abram Goldman Armstrong, and he's the financier of Antifa. I think they saw a Jewish name and thought I was George Soros or something like that. And, you know, basically, they've been targeting me personally and my business now for some time. And so this is something that's been an ongoing threat. But, you know, this isn't just a threat to me. This is a threat to everybody in our community. They've been attacking trans folks, people of color. They've been harassing other businesses. And, you know, after they attacked on May Day, I said, you know, we're not going to stand for this. And luckily, another business who'd been attacked had put me in touch with Juan and Robin, and I reached out and said, hey, you know, can we do something? Because they were threatening to come back. We had another event on the Friday night. We were showing a documentary about trans woman of color, and they were threatening to attack that and also threatened to attack our benefit for the Multnomah, Duguid Multnomah homeless veterans shelter. So we had a benefit show on Saturday night, and they were threatening us with violence and, you know, online claiming that we're disrespecting the military. At the same time, we're holding a benefit for houseless veterans. So, these people have no basis in fact or reality, and it's quite disturbing. So.
And you were listening to Abram Goldman Armstrong, the founder and owner of Cider Riot, a cider brewery and pub that has been attacked by and been targeted by Patriot Prayer and were attacked on May Day. One of the people that was hurt on May Day was a woman that one of the other men he's been named in the lawsuit, hit right on the stop back of the head with a... billy club type object, and she went down immediately and was unconscious, and you can see video of her being carried off into Cider Riot when this was happening, and then more people forcing the Patriot Prayer people back. If you look at the two crowds, I invite you to do that. You can see one is more armored up, one has more weaponry, and the other is trying very hard to push them away, get them away from the patio of Cider Riot, away from being able to mace people and hit people on the head with clubs. The woman that was hit got a injury to her cervical vertebrae, a significant injury, and she was also unconscious for a period of time. So I'm assuming they're going to be assessing her health, her doctors with her. We cannot allow, I say, here's my opinion as a program host. I'm not unbiased. I try to always only tell you truthful things, but I also tell you my bias and my opinion. And in my opinion, we've come to a new low when fascist organizations can come to our city and injure people having cider, no matter what they think those people are. Would it have been okay if they had attacked a black bar, if we still had one in Portland, and started attacking people there? Would it? There's a way that the press has been handling this that to me seems to indicate they want to somehow let Patriot Prayer off the hook, because this was just mutual combat. And multiple sources, including, I was not particularly happy with Willamette Week's coverage as well, or the Tribune, referred to this. And at the press conference, there were people who clearly wanted to talk about mutual combat and wanted to describe what happened at Site Riot as mutual combat, and that just is not so. Mutual combat would be when two parties came together somewhere to fight on purpose. People came to celebrate May Day and International Workers' Day at Cider Riot. They didn't come to have a riot. And also, some of the press described it as a riot. And though it was a violent attack that was pushed off, it was not a riot. It was not, you know, just any people getting caught up running amok. It was a violent fascist organization who has openly spoken about in their social media that they want to destroy Cider Riot. And they came and they attacked people and they injured people. And they've done this every time they've come to the city to have these kinds of attacks. They injure people. And where were the police? You know, the police say they monitor this group really closely, you know, moment by moment. And we know that police agencies can read texts in real time. We know that because that's come out in testimony at grand juries when they followed people in their car watching their texts, people who were traveling to a protest up in Seattle. So we know they can read their text in real time. Where were they in those, you know, 20 to, you know, in the minutes between the call and the minutes when they came? They were not there to defend the public. And I'm tired of paying even 1 cent to police bureaus that do not protect the whole public. I don't think their job is only, you know, I used to think they would protect businesses, but apparently they don't protect businesses either if those businesses don't have the right ideology for our police department. I think this is scary and dangerous. I want to, for those who don't remember the history of Nazism, look in Germany, you know, Google the brown shirts. These were groups of thugs who, before Hitler came to power and after he came to power, their job was to go and create violence. Go and they would drag Jewish people off the street and beat them and, you know, wreak havoc everywhere they went. And the purpose was to chill honest dissent, to put a stop on people being able to have a voice other than the Nazi voice. And it was very successful. And, of course, they were not brought to account by the law. So it's a dangerous, dangerous time in America, and I think we as the public need to realize that we need to stand up for everyone being attacked by the Nazis. There were lots of people who did stand up for Cider Riot. One, the people who were there who could attempted to defend themselves and to not allow Patriot Prayer to get inside the business itself and wreak havoc inside the from the patio in through the doors into the business. And I know that the owner was very grateful for that. I also know an interesting little tidbit is that Earl Blumenhauer, apparently his office reached out to Cider Riot, and he's been a long-term supporter of cider brewing in Oregon as part of his job. And he has come forward and made a made the gesture of coming by and having a cup of cider after the May Day event to show his support. I think that was true leadership on his part. It doesn't mean I always support Blumenhauer, but I sometimes do. And when he takes an action like that, I call that true leadership, because he was doing what really we all need to do, is give Cider Riot our business. I don't even drink. Actually, I don't drink wine, beer, or cider, but I'd have a glass of cider to support Cider Riot, not because they're under attack, and that's the point. I didn't go into yet, but I can give you some more information. But I want to encourage you to call in. This is a call-in show. I know it's not at our usual time, but I would love to have you call in and talk about this issue. I feel it's like one of the most important issues facing us here in Oregon and in Portland, and I assume all over the country from all the number of hate attacks, is that we need to be really clear that we stand up and oppose the right wing having any ability to attack other people. This isn't a question of free speech. It's never been a question of free speech for Joey Gibson. He just knows what little phrases to pull out to have people agree with him, because what he does is attack. And if you watch his own live streams, you see that. It's a very dangerous time when he's allowed to operate, and when our media goes ahead and treats the victims like they are part of the problem. Cider Riot wasn't part of the problem. They haven't been taking illegal actions. They weren't involved in illegal activity. They were involved in completely legal activity. One of the things that was talked about at the press conference was that for about a year now, Patriot Prayer has been, and he just talked about in the clip we heard, has been attacking Cider Riot. It's resulted in a lot of harm. They've been sending false reports to the OLCC. Cider Riot has had to take down their Facebook page, their Twitter page. They've also had to stop answering their phone on a regular basis because they get so many hate calls. So the attack was not just the one incident, the incident where they physically injured people and came with the intention of doing that. The attack has been long-term. Also, as was mentioned in that clip from Abram Goldman Armstrong, they have vandalized their property and other property nearby them in the past. I believe it was in January, where they spray painted all over the buildings and called them something about Antifa. And so, you know, they're not unorganized. And these groups and local areas get the support nationally of others who are of like minds. And it attracts more danger to us here in the city. And we have to see it as dangerous to us. Are you always going to be the people, if you're out there listening, are you the one they're going to target because maybe you do take part in civil disobedience or demonstrations or protests around causes that you like? we have to see ourselves in the place of Cider Riot, and we have to say that we don't want a city that will allow that, and we don't want a police department that refuses to respond in a timely manner. They have said a couple things about their response time, but they have not said that they were in fact staged nearby. They've made statements that they had to like pull people together at the last minute, all which sound like a pretty incompetent, bumbling police force if you didn't know it was part of their plan. After some of the events taking place, I believe it was in June through August, and the event where the police attacked people violently and caused injuries there, we thought there might be a pullback of the police activity. But in fact, this tactic of standing off and not doing anything is something they've used before. And they've once again, they do that and characterize the events that follow as mutual combat. Because people will defend themselves physically does not mean it's mutual combat. That means one group will defend themselves when under attack and will protect themselves as well. I believe we have a caller on the line. Eric, thanks for calling in. You're on. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning.
Hi. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to call and weigh in on the conversation with Joey Gibson and the Patriot Pair and those yes. thugs that have been coming into our city and wreaking havoc on not just Cider Riot, but other businesses and community gatherings in our city. I am a part of a queer and trans event that's been going on for 12 years over at the Boston Nova Ballroom, and several times we've been threatened to be visited by these guys, to where we've had attendees from our LGBTQI community feeling scared and threatened to leave their homes to come out in our city where they should be enjoying this beautiful city of ours. And instead, you know, they're hiding or feeling afraid to come out because of these people crossing state lines and threatening their lives because of their sexual orientation or just because they're different. So this is something that's been going on for a while, and the lack of response and concern from the Portland Police Department has been more than disturbing for a lot of people in our communities, particularly marginalized communities in our city. And I wanted to also say that the behavior that I've witnessed personally with some of the riots that have happened down in the city when Patriot Prayer has come over and clashed with anti-fascists, watching Patriot Prayer people pull out zip ties after starting physical fights with anti-fascists and knocking them to the ground, the police have stood by and allowed these people to zip tie them and basically arrest these people, these activists. And that is should be, I believe, is against the law. But I'm just pointing out the relationship there between the police, I believe, and the relationship they have with Joey Gibson and the Patriot Prayer is also very disturbing as a queer person in our city.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, and I have heard that they make threats. They'll make them on social media. They'll encourage other people to come and cause problems. And I agree that over close relationship with the police do have a history of tolerating, at the very least, Nazism and certainly white supremacy. Many of us are old enough to remember a time when they had killed an African-American man who was stopping a robbery at a gas station, and the police were getting a lot of heat for it, and some of them made t-shirts that said don't choke 'em, smoke 'em. And a possum,
oh my God.
Yes, and a possum was thrown on the front porch of one of the black businesses in town, a prominent black business, by police, we believe. And so, you know, they have a long history of white supremacy and Nazism, but they should be held to account, and they're not. We do not have a mayor now or recently who will hold them to account and who will say, you know, this you cannot continue to do with the police. And they have an extraordinarily strong union that somehow the city bows to over and over again. So, yeah, I hear what you're saying. So can you tell me any more about their their threats on queer and trans people?
Excuse me. We do a new band.
Excuse me.
The dance party. It's okay.
Excuse me, I have a horrible cold, so there I go. Okay. Go ahead now and
no
speak
worry.
Again.
You're allowed to cough. We've been doing an event in this city for over 12 years now, and only in the recent year we've been getting threats online. We had their attorney, Van Dyke, I forget what his name is, he was lobbing threats against us on our pages on Facebook, and then other people, as we went to their pages that were supporters of or were a part of Patriot Prayer, were talking about coming to our event inside and beating people up, coming to have a Budweiser after punching people in the face. This is word that they had on their social media accounts that they were talking about coming and doing to our event. And surprisingly, probably not surprising to you, the only people that came to actually support us and make us feel safer at our own event was anti-fascists who stood outside in numbers to make sure people were safe getting to and from their cars or however they needed to get home and get to the event. We had anti-fascists and other concerned community members standing outside of our venue, walking the area, just making sure that everybody was safer, and nothing from the police. I know you're not going to be surprised by that. I'm not, but I do want to just press how severe that relationship is between these thugs and our Portland Police Department, and what I would say has been going on for some time. It's nothing new.
Yes. Well, thank you for all of that, Eric. It's really important for the rest of us to know. And I didn't realize, and maybe this is because I don't use social media as much as some other people do, but I didn't realize how much they had been active in trying to destroy different individuals and businesses here in Portland through social media. And many of us have heard about this, like with Congresswoman Ilhan Omar, and how she's facing incredible threats online and even threats that are delivered in other ways. I heard her mention that there are gas stations that have assassinate Ilhan Omar written, you know, graffitied on the walls in her home state and hometown, and death threats. And this is a tactic that they're using, and it's a pretty effective tactic if you think that some places have had to shut down their social media sites just to stop it. Or like at Cider Riot, they've had to stop answering the phone because the calls are like robocalls of hate calls, just calling to yell stuff. And people like Joy Gibson can incite this kind of activity without ever having to lift a finger to their own keyboard, at least after they've done their Twitter or their call out. And yeah, I think it's terrifying that our police step aside. And I personally also am grateful to the people who are identified as anti-fascists and who often will wear masks at public demonstrations. That's because, you know, the police are not on our side. You don't necessarily want them identifying you for future action. Also, it can protect a little bit about tear gas. But I think that the anti-fascists have been really a support for us. And some people don't like to hear this, but the last demonstration I was on was the one where people were so severely injured and where our chief of police, outlaw, later bragged that they had beat our butts or something like that was what the language she used in terms of the damage that was done to protesters and people there who were just carrying out their own civil liberties, their right to free speech and their right to demonstrate. Well, I was at that march, and I'm getting a little older, and I've had back injuries. I can't go as fast as a lot of the marches go sometimes. So I was taking a breather, sitting down, and I could see a couple blocks away the beginning of interaction between the police and demonstrators. And there were a couple people who identified as Antifa who were there, a couple men. And, you know, I said, I think they're down that way, but I can't really go or do anything because it's a little hard for me. And they said, well, we've got you. We'll handle this. And they headed on down there. And multiple times have I felt protected when the police have put their back to Patriot Prayer, their faces with their clubs and their masks and their armor to us, the demonstrators. And the only people protecting us from those police were the Antifa. And I was grateful for them being there. That's really true. I felt protected and I felt like I needed protection because the police were certainly not there to protect us. They were there to assault us. So I want to thank Eric for his call. I want to encourage, just one moment, we're going to... (coughs) take a cough break there. I want to encourage other people to call in like Eric did. Tell us your experiences with this, what your experience is with these fascists coming to our cities and attacking it. The number is 503-231-8187. I do want to talk about the lawsuit. There were people from the press who were going, a gentleman from the Tribune was going, why a lawsuit? They don't have much money, do they? And, couple times that question was asked, and one, the question isn't about money, but it is for compensation, because this is costing Cider Riot a lot. It's really severely damaging their business. They use their social media to promote their business and to promote social activities happening at their business, and they can't afford to have people afraid to come to sit down and have a cup of cider and enjoy the evening. So but the lawsuit, I wanted to go back in history a little bit with our white supremacy here in Portland and talk about an earlier lawsuit that was done in 1990. In 1988, Mula Geta Sara, who was an Ethiopian immigrant here and was going to college, was at his apartment complex sitting in a car with some other friends from Ethiopia when a group of skinheads showed up. They began an assault on that car. Mula Geta was trying to stop it, stop the fighting, and protect people, and he was beaten to death. Four people did go to jail for his death. One died in jail of hepatitis C. Then there followed, Tom Metzger was a big leader in the white supremacist movement of skinheads, and he had been openly asking for these kinds of behaviors on the part, he'd been sort of like initiating behaviors on the part of the skinhead followers. And so the Southern Law, the Southern Law Center, Civil Liberty, I'm not going to get the words out for some reason. I'm not able to say it. But anyway, the Southern Poverty Law Center, there we go. They did a lawsuit. Morris Dees was their litigator, and they won that lawsuit against Tom Metzger. They asked for something like $12.5 million. That's how much they won. And no, they did not collect that. They did not collect $12.5 million. But the effort to defend themselves broke the back of that white supremacist group. Tom Metzger still agrees can speak as an old man and still say some of his racist stuff, but he lost the whole organization, and all of that pushed back the skinhead movement here. And as an actual result of it, about $100,000 were claimed. And I read that Metzger's house ended up getting sold to a Hispanic couple, and that the litigants were quite happy about that. So the white supremacist lost his house, and it ended up being in the hands of Hispanic couple who were just buying the home. The thing is that these lawsuits can have an impact. They can have a huge impact, and depending on how people respond to them as well. And so I did look and see that Patriot Prayer is an LLC. I looked that up. That's a limited liability corporation. It means that the individual who is the head of it cannot be held personally accountable for its debts, but the LLC can be held accountable for its debts. So money that Patriot Prayer takes in, and by the way, he fundraises throughout these live streams. I mean, part of what he's doing is asking people to send him money. And it does go into his personal account, and I'm not the tax bureau to determine if he's doing good on his tax returns, if he's actually keeping that money appropriately separate. But lawsuits can have a big impact, and if we could get Joey, knock down Joey Gibson's ability to continue doing what he's doing, that could have a significant impact in the city. I also think the lawsuit can over and over again bring to the public's attention the role of the police in allowing this to happen, maybe even fostering it to happen. When Lieutenant Jeff Nia of the Portland police, he was head of the rapid response teams, the ones that go and beat people at demonstrations. He was found to be texting Willamette Week, I believe, got the text with Joey Gibson, and it seems clear to me at times he was telling Joey where his targets were to go attack. You can read it, go back to the Willamette Week, read other articles, but it seems pretty clear that they weren't just being in contact. It wasn't just what some people called an extra friendly relationship. I think it should be illegal, and I don't understand why it is not when they when the police tell someone they know who attacks demonstrations where their targets are. Also, he told them, he warned them about the warrant on one of his members and, you know, said, we're not really going to do anything with that, but don't draw any attention to him because we might have to, basically. So the police, I think, are actually aiding and assisting. And I think that most of the people who have been at these demonstrations see that. They're aiding and assisting the extreme right in attacking people in our city. Just the opposite of what we need. And we need a big shakeup in our police. We really do. We found out so many things about them in the last few years, including, you know, that 50% of the regular police's arrests are of homeless people. So we have police are spending their time busting and hassling homeless people and supporting fascists and allowing them to carry out their attacks on people. Once again, where were those police? Were they staged on down on MLK at that Plaid Pantry just a few blocks from Cider Riot? Did they just stand down through the whole thing and allow those injuries? I'm hoping that at some point there can come a lawsuit against the police. I know that the lawyers from the Oregon Justice Resource Center are certainly interested in other legal tactics besides just the lawsuit in putting a stop to what's been going on with these kind of attacks here in Portland. Do we have another caller on the line? Okay. We don't have any callers on the line. I hope you guys aren't sleepy out there and I'm not boring you to death. You know, the best way to not have to hear my voice or my horrible cough again is to call in and let us hear from you. And, you know, I really do mean that. I want to hear what you have to say, what your experience has been with this. If you think, well, maybe Cider Riot brought this on themselves. Anything that you want to say about this topic, I would like to hear because I think it's really important that we engage in it. And I know this isn't our usual talk show morning time, but that doesn't mean you can't pick up the phone. So it's 503-231-8187. That's the number for KBOO Community Radio when you want to get on the air. That's our air room number. So please give us a call, 503-231-8187, and talk about this latest attack by the fascists in our city and the police response to it and the lawsuit, what you think about all of this, and what do you plan to do about it? Because, you know, they're not going away. I know that, you know, I've heard people, good, well-meaning people, say, well, what if we just left them alone? What if we just ignored these guys and didn't do anything to them? Wouldn't they go away? Well, I think this May Day might be a good example of how that's just not so. They spent much of the day hectoring the May Day protests and organizations, activities that were going on. They were attempting all day, and he brags about this, trying to bait people, get people into fights with them. They did it another time at the Occupy ICE venue. The day that they knew it was being taken down by the police, they showed up there, right around with the police, and started trying to get people to get in a fight with them. I'm sure they mean to be able to get them arrested. So, you know, the activities that these guys are carrying out are not neutral, and they won't just go away. So they didn't just go away after nobody fought back with them from ICE, and they didn't just go away after they had a day of trying to get in fights with people on May Day. No, they went ahead and came to the celebration in the evening after May Day was over to attack it as well. Seemed like they weren't going to leave the city if they couldn't get into a fight. By the way, some of these people are not from Vancouver. The lawsuit is against at least four other individuals, and some of them are from Clackamas County, and some from Multnomah County, and one even from Lincoln County comes over from the coast to get in on this action. This has to be taken seriously. We have to realize that, no, they're not going to go away if we ignore them. They just consider that a reason to up the ante, to make things more difficult, to cause more strife. And they don't go away even when people fought back. Now, it was the community that drove them back at Cider Riot. I should say that the police never showed up. So after it was on video that a woman had been hit on the head and there was a group of people surrounding her trying to get her up and on to, you know, get her inside and get her medical help. You can see that that's about the time Joy Gibson starts to be backing up, and the crowd from Cider Riot is trying really hard to just push them back, get them away from Cider Riot entirely, and they did succeed in that. I also heard that they were intending to come back the next day once the lawsuit was out. Somehow they didn't come back. We don't know that that directly impacted them, but we're hoping it will. We're hoping they won't want to build up a record of more. We do have someone else calling, a caller on the line who was a witness to the event. Hi.
I'm an anonymous witness.
Hi.
To the entire thing. We were sitting in our car across the street when we saw them, like, coming up the street towards Cider Riot. They had dissension among themselves. They had to go back up the street to have a huddle. And then they came down the street totally with the intention to attack. The entire thing was a siege. The only mutual combat was two people who did fight each other while both sides out of it. It was a total siege. I went around the corner and we saw their action, and so we parked further just where we were. Now facing west, and Cider Riot is right to the northeast of us. And so now, as they came across, we were effectively behind enemy lines. And so didn't even want to get out of the car, and also blonde-haired lady knows me very well. I could have been identified really easily. And I waited a long time to where they were so busy, and I finally got out of the car. I saw the girl go down. I was part of the crowd that surged forward. Someone was going to start filming. I moved forward. He kept running. You know, I saw the entire thing. It was a siege. There was nothing, anything else about it but that, and that's what I want to say.
Well, thank you. I really, really appreciate you calling in and giving your firsthand account, because, you know,
also, to back up the other people, I've been to many Occupy ICE things. I've seen a lot of this before, you know, but it'd just be repeating stories people already told, but this is a total program. They're total buddy up with police. We've been to all kinds of the riots too, and yeah, what everyone else said, I'll back up. So that's all I got to say. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much for calling in. I really appreciate that. That was anonymous calling in, talking about his. He actually saw the events at Cider Riot, and now we have Pete on the line. Hi, Pete.
Hi. Thank you so much for talking about this important topic. I just want to give a shout out to Cider Riot. We love you and we support you. And anybody who supports defending rights. I just want to also point out that today there's a giant rally down on the waterfront, the teacher walkout day for the state. It's people are gathering at 10:30-ish Tom McCall Park to march and to rally in support of fighting oppression from the inside of the education system and demanding that lawmakers fully fund education and that we get the Republican senators back into the state house so they can vote.
Oh, I hadn't realized they're trying to keep themselves out so that they don't have the votes go the way they don't want them to. It's an old tactic. I thank you for bringing that up. I did mean to. I heard about it the last couple of days, and I did mean to mention it because I do think it's important for KBOO to be able to tell you where the action is and where it's happening. And so that rally is at 10:30 on Tom McCall Waterfront Park, and it's the teachers who've walked out, I believe, all over the state. I hope that's happening right now.
The whole
that
state.
Yeah,
all day
they're going to.
Some of the teachers in the districts are saying that this is so important that they have voted to not get paid for today. So they're showing the public that they are willing to sacrifice their own household incomes to protect the educational rights of the children of this state and the future of our state. So we're just out there trying to fight oppression from the inside, like I said.
Well,
so
thank you. Yeah, thank you, Pete, and thanks for bringing up that rally, and thanks for your shout out to Cider Riot. I don't know, do we have another call on the line? Tom, I believe we have Tom on the line. Hi, thanks, Tom.
Hi there. Yeah, I just wanted to kind of throw a question out there. Someone was telling me that Patriot Prayer and Patriot Pride are two different entities, and that it's Patriot Pride that it, you know, gets in these little rumbles with Antifa. And do you know if there's a difference between Patriot Prayer and Patriot Pride, or
Proud
Boys?
I don't know if there's a difference. I know they associate with each other, and members of other organizations have regularly come to the things that Joey Gibson and Patriot Prayer sponsor. And so it may be that they have some different names or different organizations that they're part of. But the person that they're suing is Patriot Prayer USA LLC, and then Joseph Joy Gibson. Also, Ian Kramer, Christopher Ponte, David Willis, Mackenzie Lewis, and Matthew Cooper, and 1 through 25 John Does. So they've been able to identify, I like that, 1 through 25 John Does. They have identified several individuals that took place in the attack on Cider Riot, and they are suing them as well. And they're suing for four different claims for $1 million each, and basically for the different kinds of problems that they cause. So, I think it's
that'd be a better way to go than just duking it out, probably.
Well, if we have to defend ourselves physically, then I think we should defend ourselves physically. But I think we have to fight back on every front, and especially including public relations, because, some people think of Joey Gibson as just, this nice guy wanting free speech. And he doesn't organize all of these attacks for wanting to have free speech.
No.
That's for sure.
Yeah. Okay, interesting. Then there's another organization called the Oath Keepers. I think it's a police association of some kind nationwide, and I wonder, if there's a tie-in between the Oath Keepers and this Patriot Prayer stuff, because I've seen it. I was down at some of the demonstrations here about a year or two ago, and they were working together.
Yeah.
That's your opinion, yeah.
I think they do. I think the organizations do work together, and social media, just how it's helped all of us be able to interact together, it also has helped them be able to interact together. The Southern Poverty Law Center has a book called The Intelligence Report, and sorry I couldn't get their name out of my mouth earlier, but it's the Southern Poverty Law Center. Their reports are called The Intelligence Report, and they have a hate group. Say that again.
That'd be where I should look if I want to.
Yeah, I think you could probably find them online really easily. Someone's a member of them and gives me their copies of their intelligence report, which I'm grateful for. But go online and see, and I think you could find out more about every one of those organizations. I kind of remember the Oath Keepers being something around some religious base for it, but they are extremely right-wing, and I think we just have to not let the names fool us, but let their actions tell us. Unfortunately, a lot of their actions, like their attacks on social media or that kind of thing, we don't hear about. And if the press doesn't really cover these things other than when they can call it mutual combat, then we're not really getting the coverage that we need to have to be able to have the public more broadly know what's happening. And so thank you, Tom, for calling in.
Thank you very much for your show. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Mm-hmm. And I want to give out that number one more time. It's 503-231-8187. I believe we have Suzanne on the line.
Yes, you do.
Hi, Suzanne.
Well, I started calling during the last segment on the missing Native American girls and women. Yes. And I want to say right now, I'm going to give you a title of a book that most people, of course, won't read, but you, if you're, have the power you have over the air, you do need to read it, because it is a real indictment of anti-social media, how Facebook disconnects us and undermines democracy. And why I called, and I didn't, as I say, I couldn't get through, but the point is that these Native American, very well-intentioned women who were speaking about the disappearances and murders, huge numbers, that they are relying way too much on Facebook, and they're putting pictures, photos of murdered women.
Yes.
On Facebook.
And
that's wrong.
Why do you think that's wrong?
We have enough screwballs. who abuse the internet all the time. But the fact that just because they want attention to their cause does not mean they have to put photos of murdered women.
Are you saying that the photos are of their dead bodies, or are you saying...
Yes, that's what I understood.
Okay. And yes. So you found those unpleasant to look at. I don't think there's anything wrong with showing them.
I don't do Facebook.
Okay.
I don't trust it at all. No, I would never do that.
Well, Suzanne, I feel a little bit differently about it. I feel like when we as a people got to see photos of, say, the deaths in Vietnam on the front of Life magazine, that we cared a lot more about those deaths.
Okay. All right. Well,
but I thank you for your.
You don't
call.
Want to hear about this book, then.
Well, you can certainly give us the name of you can. Wait, Suzanne. You can certainly give us the name of that first book about Facebook. What was?
Yes, it's called Anti-Social Media, and it is written by a professor at the University of Virginia, and he has been teaching this class for 4 years now. Now, it's a long name, so be patient. He is from the country of India, originally. He's brilliant on all...
Okay, just give us the name, though. We got to get moving. Keep going. The name?
S-I-V-A is the first name.
Uh-huh.
V-A-I-D-H-Y-A-N-A-T-H-A-N.
Okay.
So, yes. Now,
yeah,
the other book.
I think they probably can Google anti-social media and find it.
Yeah. Now, the other one is on racism and hate, and it's called Biased, B-I-A-S-E-D, by Jennifer L. Eberhardt, Ph.D. It's a brilliant, brilliant book. Her science, I'm a chemist, her science is faultless.
Wonderful.
And she's working on this. Yeah, she was Genius of the Year, and she's on the faculty at Stanford.
Okay.
And she's just, well, tell people, too.
Yeah.
There is a contact inside, and they can easily look it up, but if they want her to come and teach a class or give a lecture...
Well, or she might be
available.
She might be a good person to have on for an interview.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Suzanne, for bringing us those resources, and I appreciate your time, and sorry you couldn't get on earlier. And our next caller is Conch.
I believe. Bye-bye.
Bye, Suzanne. Hi, Conch. Are you there?
There was a caller who was asking about the Oath Keepers.
Uh-huh.
And the Oath Keepers and the Three Percenters are both paramilitary groups that are have been working definitely a little bit alongside the Patriot Prayer folks. But it's interesting that the Multnomah County Republican Party has pretty much deputized the chair of the Republican Party here in Multnomah County, James Buchel, or Buchel, I'm not sure how it's pronounced.
Yeah, I've seen that.
He actually recruited the Oath Keepers and the Three Percenters for his personal security when he was doing events and fundraisers alongside.
I remember hearing that, you know, and because they're such an extreme right-wing group, it's funny to me that the other Republicans who, you know, considered themselves sort of mainstream Republicans, more moderate, not, you know, viscerally right-wing, put up with this. This is their chair. They must elect him to that position.
Well, you know, I'll tell you what, the Multnomah County fair is coming up later this month at Oaks Park, and there's always a Republican booth there, and for the Multnomah County Republicans, and I think I might politely, you know, ask the folks there, are you still using paramilitary groups to provide so-called security for your leaders of the local county Republicans? Willamette Week has been doing some great reporting on this, so, you know, it's worth looking into some of their reports on this.
Yeah, good. Thank you so much for calling in with that, Conch. I really appreciate it. The more information we have about what's going on in our community, and especially when it's things like this that can have a really huge effect, I think the more important, you know, it's really important for us to get that kind of information out. So that's the Multnomah County Republican Chair, James Buchel, I think is how you spell the name, B-U-C-H-E-L, I believe, has been hiring paramilitary groups, the Oath Keepers and the Three Percenters, to guard him at events. I had heard that before, so I really appreciate that being brought to the fore. Maybe the mainstream is just moving so far to the right that they don't see the difference anymore. I don't believe we have time for any more calls. I want to thank you, everyone who did call in. I want to thank you for giving your attention to this show. It means so much to us. You know, all of us who produce these programs, we're volunteers, and we do it because it's important to us. So thank you again. This is Linda Olson-Osterlund signing off.
Holds an open meeting concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Program Advisory Committee meets the second Tuesday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Tomorrow Will Be, Friday, May 10th from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Old Church Concert Hall in Portland. Tomorrow Will Be is an all-ages event presented as the final show of Boom Art's multi-generational Festive Revolution season. This song-sharing and community celebration is inspired by the project Primer for a Failed Superpower. Following the performance, the audience is invited to meet with local activists and organizations at the Social Justice Fair. Again, that's Tomorrow Will Be, Friday, May 10th, from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Old Church Concert Hall, 1422 Southwest 11th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning, KBOO listeners. You are listening to KBOO Portland, community-supported radio for all of Portland and beyond. And coming up at 10 is Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. And then the Dirt Bag is going to be taking a look at your watering your garden and trying to grow apricots in Portland. I'm not sure if growing apricots is hard to do in Portland or not, but stay tuned for Dirt Bag to find out. All these KBOO programs are made possible by member support. If you'd like to become a member, go to kboo.fm or use our mobile app and click on